I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels' family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene Fodor.
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano. Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Dublina Chakraborty.
And I'm Sarah Dowdy.
And we always say that one of the most interesting things about history is that it's not static. It seems to be to a lot of people. I mean, it's something that happened in the past.
Printed and published.
Yep, it's done. But what we know about the past often continues to evolve through research and exploration and exciting new discoveries. So that's not actually the case. It can be frustrating, I guess, if you have just published a book or something and then the new information about the topic you were researching comes out. But we actually always find it exciting to explore new possibilities regarding established historical counts or those different takes on stories or mysteries that we've covered before. We do this sometimes with those year-end episodes that we do.
And I think we've mentioned this before, too, but we do always hear from you guys whenever there's sort of a newsy update to a story we've covered in the past. So we're going to be updating one of those stories today. And I think of all of the historical mysteries that have been covered on this podcast, arguably one of the most befuddling is the one surrounding the lost colony at Roanoke. And Candace and Josh covered this mystery on the podcast back in 2008. And as you'll find out in just a few minutes, they leave off still kind of scratching their heads as to what really happened, because the truth is nobody knows for sure, even to this day, this updated podcast. But for those of you who haven't heard their podcast and don't know about the mystery, Roanoke was basically one of the first attempts by the English to establish a colony in North America in the late 16th century. We're talking pre-Jamestown here.
So we won't give away all the details since you're about to hear Candace and Josh's take on it, but essentially 118 colonists led by a man named John White show up on Roanoke Island in the Outer Banks of present-day North Carolina in 1587. White goes back to England to get supplies and returns in 1590, and when he shows up, all of the colonists, their homes, the fort's cannon, the whole shebang, they're all gone, as if they've just vanished into thin air. And one thing Candace and Josh go into is how, at the time, nobody really got a chance to search for these lost colonists. It wasn't until years later that investigations into the disappearance and the colonists' ultimate whereabouts really began, and they continue to this day.
So that brings us up to the present time, and just recently in May, the combined efforts of historians and researchers both in the United States and across the pond uncovered a clue in this mystery that might lead to a major breakthrough in figuring out what really happened to all of these people. So it started last year when UNC economics professor Brent Lane was studying the Virginia PARS, which is a map of coastal Virginia and North Carolina that John White, the guy Dipolina was just talking about, created back in the 16th century. And Lane is a member of the First Colony Foundation, which is a Durham-based group devoted to studying these really, really early colonial expeditions.
As Lane is studying this map, his goal is to examine Native American villages, but he starts to get really intrigued by these two small patches of paper that have been pasted on top of two parts of the map. And we should say that using patches like this wasn't really unusual at the time. If you wanted to make changes to a map, you put a patch over the part that you wanted to change and then drew over the patch. That was just how you did it. But Lane started to get really curious about what was underneath those patches. The rest of the map, to him, just seemed so meticulous that those patches seemed out of place.
So Lane decided to ask the British Museum in London, where the original map has lived since 1886, if anybody there had ever tried to figure out what was under the patch, and they hadn't. So they put the map on a light table, which revealed the new, somewhat startling clue that may finally reveal what happened to the lost colony at Roanoke. But before we tell you much more about that clue and its implications, we're going to take a listen to Candace and Josh's episode, which will give you all the background on the Roanoke colony and some of the prevailing theories about what might have happened.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm editor Candace Gibson, joined by staff writer Josh Clark.
Call me God Gifu.
A throwback to our Lady Godiva podcast.
That is true.
You know, it's almost as quaint as a cute little 11th century Anglo-Saxon village.
What?
Colonial villages. Just, I like thinking of all the buckles on the little thatched roofs and the tea and, you know, like the high spirits of no more king. It's just kind of sweet.
Or, you know, the whole puritanical outlook, the encouraging citizens to spy on all their neighbors and tattle and all that kind of thing.
I mean, either
you know,
way you look
hangings,
at it.
The hangings, the burnings at the stake, that kind of thing.
Valid point.
Yeah. I kind of view colonial life as fairly grim, but I'm pretty glad they stuck it out because I'm pretty happy to be here.
Here we are today. Yeah. And that's funny because colonial life, you're right, it was really grim. And it took a really strong person to volunteer to come over on a boat to a land that they hadn't seen before and stake out a life here. It's about survival and about finding an appropriate power hierarchy and creating new life and new traditions. And so you look at a place like Colonial Williamsburg, for instance.
Which is pretty. I agree.
Yeah.
Have you been?
I have.
They've got that super cool like museum tour, and every once in a while there's like a wax figure in there. Especially the insane asylum is particularly disturbing.
Ooh, I haven't been there.
They show, they have like a wax figure in, I think, a straitjacket with a metal cage over his head. And it really kind of drives home, you know. It was a good thing not to be insane in colonial America.
And, okay, so that aside,
yeah.
Colonial Williamsburg is a pretty quaint place, but it's sort of overshadowed by the mystery of, I guess, colonial Roanoke.
Yeah, Williamsburg is, you know, very recent compared to Roanoke.
Right.
Which is first settled in 1585.
Mm-hmm.
There was a group of like 100 people, 100 men, actually, I should say, mainly military guys. There was a scientist who came along and an artist named John White, who later became governor of the next Roanoke colony. And it didn't stick.
No.
It didn't work out all that well. They lasted 10 months, I think.
And people had come before even this group came over.
Yeah, there was an expedition.
And they scouted the area, you know, did some surveillance, found where the best place would be for the settlement, things like this, the normal things to do. And after the reconnaissance mission came these settlers, and they couldn't get along with the Native Americans. And
well, let me interject here. It wasn't really the natives' fault.
No, completely not.
There was a policy of kidnapping anytime they wanted information, food, anything.
Right. They would hold the tribal leaders for ransom.
Yeah. And then, you know, let them go or maybe not. There was another incident right after that 1585 colony was established. They found a silver cup was missing, so they burned down an Indian village. So
not
I mean,
exactly
there was
tit for tat.
No, and the worst part is especially with the Powhatans, they were pretty friendly with the English settlers from the moment they arrived. Mm-hmm. And the first wave of settlers, the first 100 men that came, really did a lot to chip away at those, you know, warm feelings pretty quick.
They did. And, you know, it's ironic because they were depending on, as they called them, these savages,
yeah,
for food and resources. And no thanks were given, essentially, like you've explained. And finally, they were under such a heavy threat of attack from the Native Americans, mm-hmm, that the men had to pick up and leave. And they didn't have any more supplies. And so they cut it out of Roanoke.
Right.
And ironically, I think about 2 weeks later, the next group came.
Well, the people from this group, the 100 men that had left for England to go get supplies, mm-hmm, they arrived about 2 weeks after Sir Walter Raleigh showed up and took the 100 men back to England. So the supply ship comes 2 weeks later, finds no one there, and, you know, they don't want to give up their stake in the new world. So Grenville, he leaves 15 soldiers behind to kind of man the settlement until more colonists can be, you know, rounded up and brought back to the new world.
And while that may have been a wise decision when it comes to holding onto your land, it was a very poor decision in terms of relations with the Native Americans, because here were a really fired up group of people who were mad at all things European.
Sure.
And these new men come, and maybe they have some idea of the precedent that their fellow Europeans have set, but maybe not.
I would think not.
And so even if they try to establish relations with the locals...
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. On Purpose's mission is to create impactful conversations to help you become happier, healthier, and more healed. This week, I talked to Tiffany Haddish in a hilarious, deep, thoughtful interview where we dive into family trauma, grief, sobriety, love, and dating. You'll be laughing, crying, and have so many impactful takeaways after this interview.
I had this, like, you know, homie lover friend for a long time. He's very disrespectful to me, very kind of messed up to me. But in my mind, we could get married. We had the most beautiful babies. He handsome. I'm pretty. Like, it would be so cool. He's smart and intellectual. I'm kind of smart, I think. Like, it would be fun. We have the best conversations. Like, we have fun, but then he would treat me like crap.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss this one.
Mother's Day is right around the corner, and in true She Pivots fashion, we're highlighting moms who've dedicated their lives and their pivots to supporting mothers. The iconic Christy Turlington will join us to talk about launching Every Mother Counts after pivoting from her 90s supermodel days. And later, The co-CEOs of Baby to Baby will share how they're addressing the needs for millions of babies and moms. So tune in and subscribe to She Pivots. New episodes out every Wednesday. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It was all shot to poo because they were essentially killed off really fast.
Yeah, we don't know exactly when they were killed off, but when the second wave of colonists arrived in 1587, about 12 months later, there was nothing but one set of bones of one of the soldiers. So, you know, clearly that he'd been killed, you know, long enough ago so that all that was left was bones. There was no rotting flesh or anything like that.
And I think that there was like a skeleton of some sort of house or hut or something nearby. It was all pretty dilapidated.
The place
at
was
this
trashed.
Point. It was trashed. Yeah, it was trashed. And in this new group of settlers, it was men, women, and children.
Yeah, this is a settlement that that much resembled later colonies. There was ways to reproduce and have new kids, and it was clearly a colony that was intended to plant. And actually, the male colonists of this colony were called planters.
Right.
So they wanted to kind of plant this English seed in the New World and let it grow, right?
Right.
And actually, the first English baby was born in the New
Little
World.
Out Virginia of this group. Dare.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yep, Virginia Dare.
Yeah.
And she was actually the granddaughter of John White, who was the artist who'd been on that 1585 expedition.
And he was back.
And, as the governor this time.
Right.
Yeah.
He's the governor now. And they set up a nice little village for themselves. I think they have two-story little houses with thatched roofs, and things seem to be going pretty well. But again, no surprise here, tensions exist between Native Americans and these people, and not between all the Native American tribes. Some are actually a little bit friendly.
Well, yeah, the Powhatans, they managed to get back in their good graces again.
Right.
But there are plenty of other tribes that had been hostile from the start or had grown hostile from the 1585 expedition that either kept their distance. I don't think that there were any attacks on the second Roanoke colony that we know of that were documented. But at the very least, they weren't helping these people out. So basically, they had the Powhatans to rely on. And supplies from England, which is, I think, 3,600 miles away from the Outer Banks of North Carolina, which is where Roanoke is.
Right.
So they were in a precarious position.
They were. And White actually had to leave get back to England
for
more supplies.
Like a month or two after.
And here is where things get mysterious.
Yeah, here's the fact or fiction part. You know, most people think Roanoke lost colony. They assume that the Indians, you know, there was an Indian attack and the colony was wiped out. So let's make that the fact or fiction part.
Okay.
You want to tell them, is that fact or fiction?
We don't really know. I'm going to go with
faction.
My default answer. And when White came back, everyone was gone.
Just gone.
Gone. And it wasn't, you know, bones here and there, like the 15 soldiers from before. It wasn't dilapidated huts like before.
He wrote later that they'd been taken down.
Yeah,
they didn't indicate that they'd been destroyed or burned or anything like that, just that they weren't there any longer.
Exactly. And he looked for a Maltese cross, which is essentially a symbol that they agreed to use to indicate distress.
Mm-hmm.
None. And there was one clue.
There were two.
Well, one and a half, really.
Right, yeah. Yeah, the word Croatoan, right?
Right.
Was carved into this impromptu fort. Basically, the colonists had built a wall around where the settlement had been. And on one of the post of this fort was carved the word Croatoan. Croatoan was an island nearby where friendly Powhatans lived.
Right.
And because there was no, I'm sorry, because there was no Maltese cross carved in, Governor White assumed that the colonists had upped and moved to Croatoan for protection, food, resources, something like that.
The other half of that clue was that on another post, or a tree, was the word crow. Like someone had started to write Croatoan.
Maybe they ran out of
finish.
Space or something like that.
Yeah,
ran and then
out
they
of...
went back and did it, you know, the full thing. That's the only clue. That's it.
And, you know, it kind of makes you want to beat your head against a wall because no one bothered really investigating the disappearance. And I think that England launched a few fleets of ships to go over, but people sort of used it to their own glory and overtook these missions as mercenary trips, really, sure, to go and exploit different parts of the land instead of investigating what happened at Roanoke.
And you have to wonder why John White didn't do it. I mean, you think about it, his daughter, son-in-law, and granddaughter were among the missing. And here he is on Roanoke Island, and Croatoan is a hop, skip, and a jump away. The problem is, when he went to go get supplies, there was an attack on England by the Spanish Armada. So he was delayed basically 3 years before he could go get back to Roanoke. And by the time he could get back, the only way to get there, he didn't even have supplies.
Right.
He was basically a guest on this passenger ship. So he had no say in what this ship did or where it went. So I believe the ship's captain decided that they were going to go up for a little piracy. And before they could, I think the season changed and they headed back for England. So he was so close to Croatoan and possibly the answer to what happened to this colony, and he had to leave.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. On Purpose's mission is to create impactful conversations to help you become happier, healthier, and more healed. This week, I talked to Tiffany Haddish in a hilarious, deep, thoughtful interview where we dive into family trauma, grief, sobriety, love, and dating. You'll be laughing, crying, and have so many impactful takeaways after this interview.
I had this, like, you know, homie lover friend for a long time. He's very disrespectful to me, very kind of messed up to me. But in my mind, we could get married. We had the most beautiful babies. He handsome. I'm pretty. Like, it would be so cool. He's smart and intellectual. I'm kind of smart, I think. Like, it would be fun. We have the best conversations. Like, we have fun, but then he would treat me like crap.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss this one.
Mother's Day is right around the corner, and in true She Pivots fashion, we're highlighting moms who've dedicated their lives and their pivots to supporting mothers. The iconic Christy Turlington will join us to talk about launching Every Mother Counts after pivoting from her 90s supermodel days. And later, the co-CEOs of Baby to Baby will share how they're addressing the needs for millions of babies and moms. So tune in and subscribe to She Pivots. New episodes out every Wednesday. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
How frustrating. And if you read firsthand accounts of what he observed, he wrote that they moved inland. I think you already mentioned 50 that.
50 miles into the
50
Maine.
50 miles into the Maine. And I have to wonder, was that a way of consoling himself? Maybe he thought it was just as mysterious and upsetting, and perhaps he convinced himself that that's what happened. He couldn't probe any further. He didn't have the resources or time, and so that's just how it was. They just moved inland, and that would have been a reassuring answer.
It would have been, but don't you find it curious that he specified a distance? 50 miles into the Maine. And also, into the Maine has come into contention. The thing I buy into is 50 miles inland into the mainland. Mm-hmm. Other people have said that white meant 50 miles north. I don't know how you get into the main or north from into the main, but that would place the settlers in about the Chesapeake area, which was where they were originally supposed to be going. They were just stopping at Roanoke to make contact with those 15 soldiers, found them dead, and apparently the pilot of the ship who was going to take them to the Chesapeake colony refused to take them any further. So they were stuck in Roanoke. So there's like mystery upon mystery shrouding this thing. There's an anthropologist named Lee Miller, and I think she's out of Vanderbilt University, maybe? I can't remember. Sorry, Ms. Miller. But she suspects that the whole thing was sabotaged by people who were out to undermine Sir Walter Raleigh, who had an exclusive patent on the New World. And that pilot refusing them to take the colonists any further was part of this plot to thwart the colonists' success.
So it may have been a conspiracy, or at least some people would think.
Sure.
And it wasn't until 1607, when the Jamestown colony came into play, that there was time and there were resources to dedicate to the disappearance mm-hmm. of the Roanoke colonists. And what's funny is that when people got to Roanoke, they couldn't even agree, really, where the settlement would have been. You know, which part of the island? Was it where the cannons were?
Mm-hmm.
Was it, you know, further inland?
Now, the cannons were located in the sound, in a little inlet, basically. Mm-hmm. And that's where the cannons were. That's where boats should have been. John White found no evidence of any of these. And the original settlement had a fort, Fort Raleigh, and that's where people had been digging pretty much since, I think, the 1940s is when serious scientific digs began to be undertaken, and they found no evidence of the second settlement. So not only were the colonists lost, the colony itself is literally lost. We have no idea where it is, where it went.
And because Roanoke is an island, people do suspect that erosion may have washed some evidence away, and mm-hmm. parts of Roanoke could be underwater now.
Yeah.
And the mystery thickens even more because supposedly there was a man who either inadvertently or, you know, just blabbing it around, somehow told the Spanish mm-hmm. where Roanoke was and that he was en route there, and this is what England was doing with the land. And the English and the Spanish were none too friendly, so people think that the Spaniards may have come in and caused some mischief,
yeah.
or that there was a shift in power among other Native American tribes. And even if the Roanoke colonists were friendly with one of the tribes, they would have been their match against a big tribal, I guess,
uprising,
melee.
War.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Again, that's one of anthropologist Miller's theories, is that there was a shift in power from the Powhatans, who were friendly with the Roanoke colonists, that they lost their control over the area, and to fill that power vacuum, other tribes who were hostile to the colonists rose up, took power. If that happened and the Roanoke colonists had moved 50 miles into the main right then, they would have been walking into just a tribal war, and they would have been slaughtered. The men would have been.
And the men and the women and children would have been sold as slaves.
Right, yeah. And there was apparently a trading network from Virginia to Augusta, Georgia, all up and down the coast. So any evidence of them would have been lost, even if they had been subsumed into any tribe that purchased them, basically, which is another theory.
Right. And there is one more possibility, at least one more, and it's a little bit more peaceful and a little bit of a happier ending, and that is that the colonists move inland and they assimilated into a Native American tribe,
mm-hmm.
and things were hunky-dory. They intermarried and produced an entirely new subset of people.
The Lumbee.
The Lumbee. And this theory is called the Lumbee Connection.
Right.
And a lot of people who made it over to the area later said that they would see people who had European dress or European manners and speech associating with the Native Americans, or that even there were some people who looked like they were neither Native American entirely nor European entirely. Maybe they had darker skin, but they also had lighter colored eyes, like Europeans.
Mm-hmm. There were some, I think, French or English settlers who were hunting and trapping in the North Carolina area, who made the first documented contact with the Lumbee tribe. So you imagine you're meeting this tribe who aren't supposed to have come in contact with any whites, and they can read and write and speak English, and some of them have gray eyes, which is an anomaly among Native Americans, and their houses look a lot like the houses you see back in England. That gives a lot of support to this Lumbee connection theory. And the Lumbee themselves, a lot of them, it's part of their oral tradition that the Roanoke colonists were assumed into their tribe and they formed the Lumbee. But that's also in dispute. There's a, especially back during the, I guess, the Anglicization of Native Americans in the 19th century, this is a big kind of, there is an identity crisis among tribes. And a lot of the Lumbee, as far as I understand, kind of, they don't really like to talk about that white heritage because it may make them perceived as less than Native American.
Well, for my money, I am thinking that they were assimilated into the Native American tribes.
I'm betting on the Lumbee connection as well.
I mean, if there were houses in the area that looked similar to what the Roanoke colonists had mm-hmm. on Roanoke, mm-hmm. and if John White observed that these houses had been, I guess, disassembled, for lack of a better term, I think they probably just took all their supplies, all the resources that they had stored on Roanoke, and just moved it all inland.
Yeah. Okay, so fact or fiction, what's your final verdict on the Indian attack?
Oh, gosh.
You'd say fiction, I guess?
I don't even know. Can I say faction?
Sure.
So there you have it. Their verdict is faction.
Or not even faction.
Not even faction. Who knows? Candace and Josh had their own theories about which theory about the fate of the lost colony is correct, but they couldn't say for sure. And truthfully, that's still the case, as we said.
Yeah, but as we mentioned in the intro, this new discovery made jointly at the First Colony Foundation and the British Museum might get us one step closer to finally solving the mystery. And what researchers found when they checked out those patches on the Virginia Pars map over the light box was that there was a little squarish symbol of the type that was used during this time to depict forts.
But what was even more interesting than that was what they found on top of the patch. When they used an ultraviolet light to examine it, they found that these really faint markings that seemed to depict the fort with other little markings around it, which appeared to indicate plans for a town or even a city around there. The researchers haven't yet figured out how these marks were made, but they suspect it might be some sort of invisible ink based on an organic material like lemon juice or even urine. So why would they want to hide plans for a development? After all, these maps, this map in particular, was basically what they wanted to use to woo potential investors in the new colonies. Well, Lane said it's possible that they were afraid Spanish spies in Elizabeth's court might get a hold of that info, and that could lead to a Spanish attack on the settlement. So they may have done it to protect the colonists.
Protect their interests a little bit. So mm-hmm. James Horn, who's the Vice President of Research and Historical Interpretation at the Colonial Williamsburg Foundation and author of a 2010 book about the Lost Colony, says that they believe this clue provides some kind of proof that the colonists moved west toward the confluence of the Chowan and Roanoke rivers in modern-day Birdie County in northeastern North Carolina.
And this even supports White's statement about moving 50 miles inland, which Josh was talking about, how there's some debate over that. Well, this is right in that sort of proximity. So that could maybe solve that aspect of the mystery as well. So the majority of the settlers might have gone there and eventually intermarried with a nearby Indian tribe, as Candace and Josh discussed. But to really find out whether there's any merit to the idea of a possible settlement in the area, archaeologists are most likely going to have to do some testing in the area, and they're still figuring out a timeline for that.
Of course, though, a lot of time has gone by since then, and a lot of the site is now the location of a residential community and a golf course. And so if there's digging involved, that will probably be an issue, you know, tearing up the third hole or whatever. So exciting for us, maybe not so much for the golfers, unless they're also history buffs, but hopefully there will still be more to come with this one.
Yeah, maybe something we will get to use on one of those year-end episodes that we enjoy so much.
Yeah, so we'll see, and we'll be waiting and expecting all of your emails telling us when there's new news about this. So in the meantime, if you want to share any of your theories, you can find us at historypodcast@discovery.com. We're also on Twitter. We're also on Facebook. And we'd love to hear any kind of Roanoke mystery ideas you have, or if you've visited this area, too, and have any ideas of your own.
And if you want to learn a little bit more about this topic, maybe you want to pass it on to your friends or something, we have an article on our website called What Happened to the Lost Colony at Roanoke, and you can find it by searching on our homepage at www.howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, was good!
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every week on Talk Easy with Sam Fragoso, I invite an artist, writer, or politician to come to the table and speak from the heart in ways you probably haven't heard from them before. Some of my favorites are with Tom Hanks, Questlove, and Cate Blanchett. In recent weeks, I talked to actor Dan Levy, director Ava DuVernay, and the editor of The New Yorker, David Remnick. You can listen to Talk Easy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Jordan Gonsalves, and I'm a journalist. Join me on my new podcast, But We Loved, coming May 15th, where queer elders recount the amazing history they've lived through.
In the middle of Wall Street, they stopped traffic. They were doing a die-in.
And in the process, share little gems of wisdom for the next generation.
The key is to understanding yourself, learning to love and embrace yourself.
You can listen to But We Loved May 15th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.